Welcome to Keeping It Civil, a podcast co-sponsored by the School of Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership at Arizona State University and Arizona PBS. I'm Henry Thompson, a professor in the School of Politics and Global Studies at Arizona State University. This is an interview show in which I talk to scholars, writers, intellectuals, and thought leaders about civil discourse, the American political tradition, and intellectual life more broadly. I hope you enjoy the conversation.
Civility is more than politeness. It is more than just being nice to one another. It is regarding one another with the dignity that we each have as human beings, and that is fundamental to our understanding of how we relate to one another in a free society where the dignity of the individual comes first.
On this episode, I talk to Hans Zeiger, the president of the Jack Miller Center, a nationwide network of scholars and teachers who are committed to advancing the core texts and ideas of the American political tradition. Hans and I talk about the private donor revolt at American universities and how it could impact the future of American higher education. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome, Hans Zeiger, to Keeping It Civil.
Thank you very much, Henry.
Can you tell me and our listeners a little bit about the Jack Miller Center and your work?
The Jack Miller Center is an educational venture to build talent pipelines for civic educators throughout our country. So in that way, we have a lot in common with the School for Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership and some of the related efforts at Arizona State that we admire so much. Each year, we select a dozen rising scholars to take part in our premier fellowship program for scholars of the American political tradition. This leads to a variety of career opportunities for those scholars. We now have over 1,100 scholars on 330 college campuses in our academic network. And some of them are involved with an effort we call Founding Civics to bring high school and middle school educators up to speed on how to present America's founding documents in their classrooms. And we've also started a national summit on civic education to really build a movement of Americans who care about the revival of civic education in our country, which is just so needed. And there's just a real opportunity that we see on the eve of the 250th anniversary coming up in 2026.
And you had a recent piece, op-ed, that was brought to our attention. It's why we decided to bring you on the show, because we thought it was really interesting, sort of a digression or a discussion of higher education funding, actually, and private investment or donations to higher education. Why did you feel the need to weigh in on that particular issue right now?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people are paying attention to higher education since October 7th, since the Hamas attacks on Israel and the campus reactions that we've seen on so many campuses, which reveal a growing anti-Semitism, but also reveal a culture of ideology in certain corners of the American Academy that is deeply concerning to certainly to many donors who are now withdrawing their support from major institutions. The challenge that as I look at the higher education landscape is that, and it's not a new challenge, by the way, because we're talking about something that started in the 20th century, where the idea took hold that the ideal business model for a university was to be all things to all people. And in the process of doing that, there was this neglect of what was traditionally understood to be the mission of higher education, which was to pursue truth. And so we've neglected this kind of central purpose of the university. You look at the mission statement of Harvard, which has the word Veritas in its motto, and many other universities have similar mottos. And yet this is not what those institutions now speak of as the primary thing that you should care about there. So our institutions don't know what they stand for. And into the void comes a host of ideologies, and now we see anti-Semitism. So for various reasons, people have been either unaware or ignorant of this state of affairs for decades, partly because of their loyalty to their alma mater, partly because they're far more aware of what's happening, say, on the football field or in the medical lab than they are what's being taught in the humanities and social sciences. But a lot of people are now waking up and realizing that reform is in order, and an organization like ours certainly has a menu of options as to what we'd like to see for reform in higher education.
One of the things I thought was so interesting about your piece was the focus on private philanthropy and private donations to universities. How are the funding sources to universities, whether they're private or public, how are they sort of divided up? How dependent are these institutions on the sort of private donations that you focused on here?
Well, private philanthropy is a huge part of the mix of higher education funding, as is public funding. I mean, I was a state legislator for a decade and worked a large part of that time on higher education policy in the state of Washington. You take any state and you look at the federal budget, and there's a lot of public largesse that's going into higher education. So, you know, the public certainly has a stake in all of this. Even with private institutions through student aid, there's a lot of public funding that's involved there. But when it comes to private philanthropy, you have an incredible amount of alumni support. And this is particularly true of the elite institutions. And so it's particularly significant when you see multimillionaires and billionaires who are saying, we're going to back out of longstanding commitments to Harvard, to Penn, to Cornell, and other elite institutions where there has been this display of anti-Semitism on campus, and where alumni are rightly concerned.
So it strikes me that the trends that's sort of happened over the last 20 years in American higher ed has actually been a decline in public funding to universities in a lot of states. I've been kind of witnessed this. I went to grad school at the University of Minnesota, where public support was pretty robust, but was still declining a lot through the sort of 2000s and 2010s. And here in Arizona, it seems like there was a much greater collapse in public support for the universities after the financial crisis, and there's really not been a real regrowth in that support. Is that something that's making these private donors more important to universities, this kind of secular trend to decreasing state funding for the, especially the public universities?
Yeah, that is, you're correct to point out what is a lot of competition in state budgets in particular, and the recession did have a major impact on declining public support in many states. Although, you know, in my home state of Washington, for example, there was a major effort to infuse new dollars and to do so at the same time that tuition was lowered. I mean, I think one of the big stories here that doesn't get enough attention is, even though what you're pointing out is correct, the cost of a higher education has risen dramatically. And I mean, it is one of the most expensive things that any American will ever pay for. When I was in the state legislature, I started paying a lot of attention to this in our public universities in Washington and realizing we don't talk a lot about getting costs under control. And when I tried to call attention to that point, you know, the institutional stakeholders have always been resistant to controlling costs. And so, and understandably, of course, but, you know, higher education as a whole is resistant to change and innovation. There are a lot of forces from faculty to administration to even alumni to just preserving things the way they are. A lot of institutional stability, and that sometimes works in favor of these institutions, but you enter something like the recession, which changed consumer behavior, changed student behavior, and then enter the pandemic, where now you have many more Americans questioning the value proposition of a higher education and thinking, you know, if you can do this online and for a lot less money than going in person, why not do that? We've been through some economic shifts that have caused millions more students and parents to question that value proposition, and there's a very competitive environment out there. And we're seeing entire colleges that are shutting down now. They can't make it with public support. They can't make it with private support. Can't make it with student tuition. And then you enter the dramatic exposure of ideology that we've seen on campuses in recent months, and the backlash that we're seeing from many institutional supporters. And higher education is clearly due for a major era of reform.
Yeah, that's why I liked your piece so much, as the kind of political economy angle to this question, because we talk a lot on this podcast about ideas and ideologies and the kind of debates that professors are probably most involved in and most informed about. But it is really clear to me also that universities where these ideological ructions are taking place are also stuck in a really challenging macroeconomic environment where, you know, as we just discussed, the public support is declining. It seems that the demand on the student side is also softening at some places, perhaps more than others. And then, of course, the universities are really scrambling and trying to compete really hard, both for private donations, but also obviously for federal money in the form of federal grants. That's another, I think, maybe big pillar of university funding that we haven't discussed yet. The big federal grants that come in with huge amounts of overhead, that they call it, right? The sort of subsidy that a big grant from the NIH or the NSF pays to the universities to maintain their facilities. Those are also very valuable to universities, and I presume becoming increasingly valuable as their direct support from the taxpayer, but also the demand from students starts to decline. So the universities, I think, they're under a lot of pressures, not only ideological pressures from within and without, but also financial pressures. And that's what I thought was so interesting about your piece, gave us a chance to discuss that. Tell me, how has it worked traditionally with these private donations? Because your piece is about what private donors should do in the face of this kind of ideological reckoning with anti-Semitism and other issues that the university is having. Have private donors really been able to have a big influence on these sorts of things in the past? It seems to me that the notion of academic freedom at universities is going to be difficult for private donors to have a big effect directly on what faculty are researching and teaching at the universities. Have they ever really been able to have much an influence, or do they just kind of give the money to the universities and the universities do whatever they want with it?
We can tackle that from a couple of different standpoints. I talk to donors who have given to their alma mater and to other institutions, and after a while, they come away disappointed. They come away even saying that they felt misled because they thought they were giving to one set of priorities and their money was used for something else. This is part of the story of Jack Miller, who started the organization I work for, giving to a university and then realizing that his money wasn't being spent quite the way he wanted it to be spent. Yes, donor intent is very important. There are probably limits to how strict a donor can control that when they're giving to a major university. The second thing to think about is major institutional foundation giving. That's an entirely different category that has had profound influence on the shape of higher education in the last, really since World War II. And you look at major trends in higher education have often been driven by concerted investment by private foundations, often done in concert with public funding. I mean, you talk about the big federal grants that are available. There's a close connection between big public grants and big private grants that are available for research. And a lot of this has driven the culture of research that exists within higher education. There's a direct line between the kind of foundation and public funding that's out there and the incentives for research that exist within higher education. And research is so incredibly important. I mean, the solving some of the world's biggest problems, curing cancer, understanding the oceans, understanding the outer space, all of these things happen in our universities. That said, I think that we maybe overemphasize research in some areas, and we do not have the kind of funding pressures for teaching that ought to exist. And even, you know, you would think that the student as consumer would drive a lot of this demand, but there are so many other pressures that come from funding sources outside of that student demand. And I think that's a problem. I think one of the major needs for reform in higher education right now is to recover the value of teaching, particularly in the humanities and in the social sciences. I am deeply concerned, you know, first and foremost in my job, with the teaching of civic education at the university level. My concern is that political science and history, a couple of the fields that ought to care about civic formation, ought to care about teaching the civic pillars of a free society, that they have neglected this in favor of narrow research agendas.
Yeah, it's a super interesting to follow the behavior of the universities from the perspective of where the money is coming from, because I think that there's a lot, this is one side of this debate that doesn't get covered enough. It's not just about ideas, but it's about where the money comes from. And you point out a very good point that alongside students' tuition, state funding, federal grants, there are these huge foundations like the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, MacArthur Foundation, and things that also are having big effects on the behavior of the universities through this lever of money. And I think this is something that's not as well understood outside of the universities, perhaps by students' parents and by students themselves, as it could be. How widespread is this donor revolt? Is it really going to matter?
Well, it's a great question. And I think it somewhat remains to be seen, because, you know, these things unfold over years rather than weeks and months. And, you know, we're 4 months now after the events of October 7th that really did cause an awakening to what was happening on campus. But based on what I'm hearing, the level of interest in the state of higher education is much higher across the board. You know, certainly folks who have a lot of money are paying attention. We're seeing headlines about that. But you look at the kind of attention that was paid to the congressional hearings and the kind of the media response to that and the conversations that that generated throughout social media and across media platforms. People are paying attention to this stuff. Universities need to stand for human dignity. They need to stand for freedom. They need to stand for the pursuit of truth. And I think that we're going to see in this very competitive environment that university leaders that say, we stand for truth, we care about truth, we think that is the purpose of our institution to pursue truth, I think those kinds of leaders are going to stand out and be rewarded for their efforts.
What about new universities or new institutions? Because one of the things you highlight in your piece is sort of this trade-off that donors can make, that they have options. You know, they can donate to specific institutions that, as you say, follow these principles. Some of them might be new, like this new university that's been set up in Texas. Do you think that's the way forward? Do you think we're going to see a lot of new universities being founded?
I do think there's going to be some of that, although I think that's a difficult thing to do. The University of Austin certainly is raising a lot of money. You're also seeing some smaller examples of that, some small liberal arts colleges that are starting out. I learned about one just the other day called Mount Liberty College. So there are some innovative things happening in that way. I also think it's worth, you know, exploring ways we can reform within existing institutions. I'm not one to give up on that. I know there are others out there who say that we should give up on institutional reforms. But I think that the schools of civic thought movement, of which the School of for Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership at ASU is the pioneering example, I think this is a serious movement in public higher education that has far-reaching potential be transformative for how civic education is done in public colleges and universities, and allows for our public institutions to reclaim their civic purpose, their civic mission, which has been badly neglected for so long.
And you have some kind of advice for donors, right? That was one of the key aspects of your piece, is you have a clear view on what donors should be doing when confronted with the contemporary higher ed landscape. Tell us about that.
Yes. So I'll just mention a few things here. So first of all, I think that funders should focus on supporting universities that are making commitments to the truth, commitments to teaching. I mentioned the importance of that teaching mission of institutions, and a commitment to civic purpose. But then the second thing is that funders ought to support programs that are reaching students directly outside of the classroom. This may be readings from the liberal tradition, whether they are extracurricular campus centers that include reading groups and lecture programs, or summer programs like the Hertog Fellowship or the Hudson Institute Political Studies Program, just to name a couple of examples, or the Fund for American Studies, the Foundation for Economic Education. These are extracurricular, student-facing programs that deserve more support and can reach more students very effectively. The other example I would give is the kind of work that my organization does at the Jack Miller Center, and that is that funders should support programs that are creating an infrastructure for serious scholarship and teaching. That is for a core of professors and academic leaders who value truth, virtue, civic purpose. And I'll just mention a couple of other organizations besides the Jack Miller Center. The Institute for Humane Studies would be one. They've been building a network of classically liberal scholars since the 1960s. And then the Institute for Citizens and Scholars, that's another one that has been building a network of professors who value the intellectual foundations of democracy since the end of World War II. You know, if we're going to reform institutions, or if we're going to create new institutions, whatever we're going to do, we need qualified, outstanding faculty who can go in and work in those places and teach students about the values of a free society.
I have maybe one concluding question, which is, given your experience as a state legislator, you have a pretty unique degree of knowledge about this. Is there any chance for a renewal of public investment in and oversight of the public universities in the United States? Is that something that could happen? And would that be a good thing? Do you think more democratic oversight at the state level, and also more money, quite simply, more investment in those institutions, could bring some of the sorts of changes you'd like to see? And do you think there's any chance of that happening?
Yeah, so let me just mention a few thoughts here. I'm a big admirer of community colleges, which are something like 40% of college students are in community colleges. And There you're talking about something that is democratic, open to all students, highly attuned to local economic needs, allows people to get a two-year degree, often is providing college credits for high school students as they complete both a high school degree and start their college. That's a large part of public higher education. Most of our higher education in general is public higher education. You know, so taxpayers and the public ought to care about public higher education. And I do think that state legislators ought to pay more attention both on the oversight side and in making sure that funding is flowing, but in a way that makes sense for the public's interest.
All right, great. Thank you very much, Hans. I'm going to ask you our closing question, which is whether you have a suggestion for a book or a podcast or a film or anything really for our listeners on the topic of civic discourse and debate, and maybe potentially something specifically about this matter we've discussed, higher education funding.
Well, absolutely. So on civic debate and the topic of civility, I want to highly recommend a brand new book that is out by Alexandra Hudson called The Soul of Civility. It is the best book that I've read on the topic of civility, and I've made a point of reading whatever I can on that topic. But I think she has tackled this subject so well and covered all the different angles. And certainly civility is more than politeness. It is more than just being nice to one another. It is regarding one another with the dignity that we each have as human beings. And that is fundamental to our understanding of how we relate to one another in a free society where the dignity of the individual comes first. So Alexandra Hudson, The Soul of Civility, can't recommend it highly enough.
That's great. Thank you very much, Hans Zeigler from the Jack Miller Center. Thank you for joining the podcast.
Thank you very much, Henry.